Welcome to Tarot for the Wild Soul, a podcast that explores the tarot through an inclusive, soul-centered, trauma-informed perspective for growth, healing, and evolution. I'm your host, Lindsay Mack. Hello, Wild Souls, and welcome back to Tarot for the Wild Soul podcast. Such an honor to be gathered here with you. Thank you so much for being here with me. So we have another one of our Ask Lindsay episodes this week, and in honor of the new intuition course I'm doing, Intuition as a Spiral, which opens for enrollment tomorrow. And from tomorrow, the 17th to the 20th, we'll be having a special early bird discount on it. So if you'd like to sign up, we have two prices rooted in sliding scale. So whichever is more aligned for your financial capacity at this time, go for it. But yeah, if you want to get it at an even deeper discount, you can from now until Friday the 20th. This question is aligned in two ways. One, that I asked for your questions about intuition, sort of in honor and support of that, and I want to continue that. And let me know if you have questions about intuition. I'd love to answer them. And two, because it pertains to the idea of trusting ourselves. And I think that that's something that all of us very sincerely grapple with. And I know that I certainly have with regard to making this course. It's the first live course that I've done in many years. It's definitely been a tricky situation and very humbling, considering that it is an intuition course and that there's actually been quite a bit of uncertainty. We're living with so much certainty on the planet right now. There's so much suffering. There is so much suffering. Thinking, of course, especially to the civilians in Gaza, to the civilians in Israel, in this horrible war. My heart just goes out to everybody involved in that. To the floods in Libya, to the earthquakes in Afghanistan, to everything. People not being able to make their bills, their rent. All of it can invite us into first of all, so many of those things are rooted in so many larger factors. There's climate change, there's systemic oppression, there's so much. And of course, civilians are often caught in that crossfire, quite literally. And when we're thinking about both enormous global circumstances and honestly circumstances that don't even hold a candle to that, like having the privilege to create a course that you're going to put on for yourself and for your community. The one of the deepest pieces throughout time, cross-culturally, no matter what we're going through, is that it is extremely difficult to feel like we have a foothold and a root system within ourselves, that we can trust in ourselves. And a lot of the time, where that basic core wounding, I believe, comes from is that we're living in such uncertainty. We're many of us taught from a very young age or moved through something at a very young age that makes us not trust in life. If we had abusive parents, if we grew up in, again, a place with a lot of systemic oppression, if we are part of a community group, if we're part of, if we've just consistently received either, racism, transphobia leveled at us, homophobia, it is an act of resistance, of radical resistance, to cultivate that trust in ourselves, since everything seems to have us think that there's something wrong. So it's a very fraught thing and something that all of us feel personally, regardless of those circumstances. You know, we could have had the privilege of never having been exposed to that kind of community vitriol or over-cultural vitriol. And if we were raised by parents who were very abusive, who gaslit us, who carried some of that over-cultural vitriol, even if no one else outside of the family unit ever made us feel less than, we may carry those internal voices with us. So these are the moments when I'm reminded that, like, my voice, my contribution is just such a humble, small one. Like, and I acknowledge that, you know, ultimately, who am I to talk about what it is to trust ourselves? There's a lot of areas that I feel a total lack of self-trust. So I just want to acknowledge that and name that. I think that's part of why I opted to answer this question, because I'm learning with all of you and have certainly been committed for the last many years and trying to trust myself alongside the din of fear of causing harm, of fear of messing up, of fear of going broke, of fear of like following the wrong instinct. So I certainly understand very acutely how this can show up. And I also know that the tarot, however humble, can be a pretty powerful tool when it comes to this kind of thing. So I thank this anonymous letter writer for sending in this question. I think it's going to speak to a lot of folks, as ultimately trusting in our own intuition, trusting in ourselves, is just about, alongside learning how to receive, you know, without apologizing for it, is just about some of the hardest work we do here in this lifetime. So with that said, this is the question from Anonymous. So Anonymous asks, "Hi, Lindsay. Thank you for your gentle guidance and support through this podcast and offerings. I have a question about intuition. I have trouble trusting myself. It happens often, but it's been flaring up even worse lately as I try to come to terms with and explore my queerness, quote, later in life. Others, I'm sure, go through this phenomenon with other things, of course. Tarot-wise, I even got a lovely queer deck to affirm me, but I have issues trusting that I asked the right question or interpreted the answer correctly. How do we even start the process of trusting ourselves? How can the tarot hold our hands as we unlearn all this shit our society has bagged us down with? I'd love some tips to ground myself when my inner transphobe or imposter syndrome gets too loud while my intuition is trying to push me to be brave and step outside of the binary. Thanks so much." Anonymous, as one queer person to another, I just want to say, I love you. I see you. And I'm so glad you're here exploring your beautiful queerness now. And you know, later in life is fucking beautiful. I don't know whether or not, I'm just speaking purely from my own personal experience, absolutely not speaking on behalf of anyone else. But I know for myself, I figured out, discovered that I was non-binary really late in life, even though like every sign was there. I just didn't know. And I knew I was queer from the time I was a kid, like super young. I was out very young and dating very fluidly as soon as I was sort of old enough to be dating. So I both completely understand what you're talking about and acknowledge that your own experience is personal to you. But I know that from my own experience, realizing that I was non-binary, there's been a very strange internal, even though no one has done this to me, feeling of like, well, am I really, because I figured it out later in life, am I, you know, like there's just so much that goes into it that like I have inner critics and inner like gender so much internalized gender bullshit too, that I'm unpacking and unraveling like kind of every day on a daily basis. Now raising a little kiddo, there's so much material that we read to her about like books made for little kids her age about like, again, gender expression and identity and body consent. And I learned from those books. I'm fucking almost 40 years old. I'm like, wow. Like, okay. Like, wow, that would have been great as a kid to have known that this was available to me, you know? So I just want to, you acknowledge this in your letter beautifully, but like, I just want to, again, just ground us in the fact that everything in life, societally and over culturally, is set up to have us deny these things. Everything in society hinges on us being predictable little drones, right? Little bees, little kind of linear beings who don't rock the boat, who aren't spiralic, who aren't an other in some way. And I know, even from being queer at such a young age and being out, that feeling was challenging too. Of like when I was very young, I loved my queerness, even when I was really young. But that feeling, it's exhausting, especially being somebody who's like pansexual, bisexual. There's so much bullshit that goes along with that. So much internalized biphobia and externalized biphobia. It's hard, you know, it is. And I know that I'm really privileged in my position. So I just want to, if for what it's worth, not centering myself, but just meeting you in a space of solidarity. I know the unique feeling of coming out around sexuality or gender expression a little later in life. So I just want to say that I really witness you in this tenderness and this process. It's a fraught one. I would say for me personally, I never had any issues about my queerness as a young person. My gender journey has been really different, like very different. And I think it's because it's a big undo, you know. It's almost like 35 years. It's been a couple of years now that I've been sort of out as non-binary. 35 years of conditional undoing, you know, and probably the rest of my life. So trusting ourselves is a huge act of resistance, and it's a formidable one. So I just want to witness you in all of this with so much tenderness. How do we start the process of trusting ourselves? I think by, first of all, shucking one of the biggest weaponizations of late stage capitalistic societal structures, which is to give yourself permission to go very slowly, to give yourself permission to be perhaps a little quieter about it, and in some cases, a lot more verbal about it, right? Because the opposite, it depends on where we're at, right? There is a sort of a much more present moment pressure sometimes to like share about things and discoveries about ourselves like immediately. For some people, that saves their lives and is absolutely right, feels totally in alignment with who they are. And for some of us, we need a lot more time sort of tucked away to make our own sense of it before we can share it with anybody else. Or we need a lot more time in sort of intimate spaces, making sense of things. We need a lot more time to make sense of our pronouns, of navigating dating, of like, you know, before we're answering questions, before we know what it means. So I would say both of those are radical permissioning to go at our pace. So I use the term slow. Maybe for you, it's quicker than what other people would do. Maybe you're sharing a little bit more vulnerably about like, hey, I just like am exploring my queerness super late in life and I don't know what that means. And maybe for you, it's really giving yourself permission to be like, I'm exploring. I would say, because you use this term exploring, it's making me think of, and again, total acknowledgement of privilege here too. When I went on an ancestral pilgrimage to Scotland back in 2019, where we did a lot of visiting to sacred sites, some sacred sites with Julia of Sacred Familiar, who so remarkably and incredibly and graciously invited me on that with her. Because it was just me, her, and this absolutely other lovely person who explored that with us, who actually is Scottish and lives in Scotland. Shout out to Lisa. Amazing. We did do a lot of exploring, and none of it was really rooted in like, we got to go here, we got to go there. There was a lot of making our way, letting ourselves be led. There's just a lot of just being on the land and letting whatever wanted to come forward from that, come forward from that. So also giving yourself permission to sort of go on a bit of a pilgrimage with this, to go on an energy of discovering and of exploring, and knowing that so much of queerness is our own internal process as well as potential connections with others. Like, we can be totally queer and asexual, aromantic, not honestly really interested in partnership. So nothing experiences and externalizations of queerness don't make us queer, right? Just like there will be some of us who may not opt to change our pronouns, who are still completely valid in our transness and in our non-binariness and in our gender fluidity. So in case you need to hear that, I just wanted to offer that too. Giving ourselves space, time, sometimes not doing, sometimes staying a little bit more on the internal end of things. I think that's one way that we begin to establish greater trust. I think that pause, that space, that moment to listen, to let ourselves be led. I also think that vulnerability is a huge part of it. Like, letting ourselves be vulnerable enough to like go on the internal exploration before we necessarily bring it external. But again, some folks may be really, really different. And I think your second question here about how the tarot, like how can the tarot hold our hands as we unlearn all the shit our society has bogged us down with? I think that that's ultimately everything we're doing in this space, is like, the tarot has no gender. It's also all expressions of it, you know, and the tarot can come with us through all sizes and embodiments of body. Every way that we move or we don't move, every way that we identify and don't identify, every way that we change, every iteration of sexuality, through every experience, from the hardest of the experiences that we can possibly imagine as human beings to some of the most glorious and in between. The tarot is ultimately a mirror for our truest selves, shining and broken, difficult and beautiful. And with every pull of every card, the tarot invites us to come home to ourselves in all of the feelings, in all that we're going through. It invites us to land at the heart of the matter, to be with all of the different feelings, to not rush past it. So I think that, you know, let's say we pull a card, you know, we're like, You know, how can I learn how to trust myself? And we pull Five of Swords, right? We may immediately, based on real old paradigm shit with the tarot, be like, fuck, like someone's going to betray me, or I'm going to get betrayed. I'm going to do the wrong thing, blah, blah, blah. Or I'm going to mess up, or, you know, whatever it is. And that's valid. You know, Five of Swords is about making our way through that, about naming, like, whoa, I am afraid of messing up here. That's about as human as it can be, as human as it gets. Our willingness to be held accountable, our willingness to learn, to repair if need be, all of that is wrapped in Five of Swords. It's holding ourselves in those feelings, learning how to be with ourselves through those feelings. Again, it's about as human as it can be to be afraid of messing up. Let's say we pull a card about learning how to trust ourselves, right? We pull, like, you know, Nine of Pentacles. That's a completely different energetic tone. How can we trust that it's okay to be in the pleasures of this life? I think Nine of Pentacles is one of the most important cards for us as far as being in these queer bodies, being in these gender fluid bodies, being in these disabled bodies, being in these bodies that are chronically ill, chronically in pain. That pleasure looks really, it is, may look different, may feel harder to access, and is reached for and moved toward in a way that deserves, is wholly radical and wholly a birthright, and may feel and look like a more spiralic experience than not. Right? So it's, there's so much conditioning that tells us that we, that somehow there's a barrier around that. And we're not allowed to sink our teeth into the fruits of life and enjoy it, when that's actually, again, a birthright. So that's when Nine of Pentacles becomes an extremely radical card of self-trust. It's okay to be in these bodies. It's okay. Because often inside of these human bodies, regardless of our identity, there's a lot of pain. And how could there not be? These human bodies are extremely fragile, and all of us are going to eventually get sick and die. Though it's really challenging to be in that space. And ultimately, like, that's the thing of it, right? If we know that we're not going to be here forever, how do we anchor into trust? The tarot can help us to come home. What I recommend to you, Anonymous, is that you use the tarot as a tool to help you to unconditionally be with all the feelings that arise. So you were mentioning you found, which I think is fucking incredible, a lovely queer deck, perfect to affirm you, but you have issues trusting that you asked the right question or interpreted the answer correctly. Valid as hell. So fucking hard. So there's two pieces of advice I would give to that. One, to have a sort of a reference guide on hand from a voice that you trust. So if that's me, wonderful. If that's somebody else and their guidebook, regardless of the deck you're using, and that just feels so right to you, use that. Because, and this is a real bow to Michelle, the teacher and coach I worked with for so long. Michelle always used to say to me, like, sometimes we need proof of God, you know, sometimes, like, we know there's nothing wrong, but we need someone to kind of remind us. I know I used to get that way with my hypochondria, that, like, I'd get so worried about something that eventually I would opt to just have it looked at, have it checked out by somebody. And I have a lot of medical trauma, so that was also fraught. But sometimes I would have a sense or a feeling that everything was okay, but needed another voice in my ear because my brain was too loud and I was too scared. And in terms of spiritual support, pendulum can sometimes be that for us, depending on whether or not that resonates. That's what guidebooks are for. You know, if we find a good guidebook, you hold on to that with all your might, like, because they're hard to come by. But if you find a guidebook that explores the tarot in a way that's spacious and warm and benevolent and helpful and useful and practical, lean on it. Because if you're worried that you may have interpreted, that's part of the process of you're in a really tender and vulnerable time right now, right? You're coming home to a truth about yourself and something that lives within you and has, and you're coming home to it a little bit later in life. This is really tender. There's a lot of joy in it, I'm sure, but it's also super tender and lends itself to all kinds of feelings. So you really want to have an anchor with you as you tune into this anchor. So guidebook would be what I would say would be of wonderful importance. I have a free guide that you could download that might be helpful if I am a voice that feels like you trust. But by all means, there's wonderful resources out there. So that's over there. Number two is, let's say you have a guidebook, but this is still coming up. This is when I invite people to be a little bit more meta about their tarot usage, which is meta maybe isn't the best word, but the best like term for it, but meaning, okay, I'm going to my tarot deck and I'm asking it, may I have an anchor card that could help to affirm me, that could help me to come home, to trust more deeply in myself? And I pull the devil. First of all, devil is the card that kept popping up to me while reading your question. Like everything you're describing is pure devil. Devil comes up when we're getting closer to the full zenith of our soul essence of ourselves. And what happens when we start to do that, when we get closer to our intuitive center, an identity that feels euphoric to us, like a sense of truth in our sexual expression or in our desire or in our creative expression, whatever it might be, when we're getting close to something really big or expansive in one area or another, what typically tends to happen is that we get invited into a lot of contraction. And that's what I mean when I say we can get incredibly tender. Oh, we're not queer enough. We're not non-binary enough. We're not enough of an intuitive. We're not enough of an artist. It's a very oddly warped attempt for the brain to keep us protected from harm and hurt. So it assimilates all of these different voices that we've heard from family of origin, from culture, from society, from wherever, our own internalized shit. The devil isn't a bad card. It is actually an incredibly liberating card that invites us to witness those invitations, to bow over to them, to say, hey, I see you, and you're not the truth of me. And I'm going to continue to be in the full expression of myself in a way that feels comfortable for me today. You know? So that's the big piece of it. So let's say you pull the devil for that question, like what card here can affirm me? From there, then you say, and you're noticing to yourself like, oh, I didn't ask the right question. First of all, that question is total devil. Like always, that's devil incarnate. Oh, I don't know. It's doubting ourselves. That's devil card. Like in its purest extent, it's shining a light on the things that make us go, oh, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe not. Did I do it right? You know, that kind of self-reflection is crucial, especially as we attempt to embark on what we're doing in this life and world, causing as little harm as possible, being very sensitive. So asking the right question, there is no right question. That was a perfect question. Maybe then from there, and this is what I mean about the tarot process being a little bit more meta, and I would say really more responsive reading, which is a term that I use for just exactly what I'm about to explain. When we say, ooh, I pulled the devil. There's a lot of doubt coming up. There's a feeling in me that I maybe didn't ask the right question. What card can I pull to help me to root into what's actually going on there? You know, like how can I tend to that feeling of doubt? And then we pull a card. And then maybe we get Six of Cups, which is a huge opening of a heart, big expression. So maybe then we pause with that. We go to the heart and we get to be present with a heart that's worried to make a mistake, that's worried to, that wants to share all that it is, and that also feels really complicated or whatever the feelings might be. And we notice that there's a lot of huge vulnerability and resistance to that. And then maybe we say, I'm really noticing that the heart wants to be open, but there's a lot of fear. How can I tend to that fear so that I can come home to my heart while also nurturing this fear that clearly wants my attention? Then we pull a card. And then we continue that process where we're just slowly stitching together this beautiful quilt, this tapestry of reading tarot for ourselves. That's how we begin to build a bridge to our relationship to the tarot as being one of profound refuging, like profound care, profound support in the midst of, in the face of whatever is going on. So again, I would say giving yourself permission to do a kind of responsive style of tarot reading is wonderful, and I think is totally the order of the day for you. And if your brain is inviting you into concern that you interpreted the answer correctly, what I would say is to keep leaning into a guidebook for a little while until you feel more sure of yourself. That's the key. You know, and to not be afraid to call on those resources because we deserve them. That's why they're there. Tips on grounding yourself when your inner transphobe or imposter syndrome gets too loud while your intuition is trying to push you to be brave and step outside of the binary. So I am not here to gatekeep you, to pathologize you, but I do want to offer, maybe those terms aren't quite it. I do just want to offer the most gentle invitation here. Intuition doesn't push. It doesn't push us. It can be persistent. And remember that your intuition is you, right? So intuition is just a word for the soul, the heart within. And we can absolutely hold the duality of there being a part of the heart and soul that's like, yes, fly, leap, go. And the brain pulling out all kinds of stuff around like inner transphobia, inner imposter syndrome, because it's afraid of what might happen if we leap and fly and go. That is the inner duality we hold around every single huge personal expansion we go through. But your intuition, and again, this is just, I don't mean to at all, I trust in the words that you used, but I just want to name, intuition doesn't really push. So while it might just be, you know, again, just choice of words, and I'm not here to nitpick that at all, or invite you into doubt around yourself because you're totally on track. I say that more to hopefully relieve you of pressure of time, because there is no pressure here, none whatsoever. You have full permission to take your time with this. You don't need to be brave about being in your queerness. You're existing in it. That's the bravest thing you could possibly do. What does brave mean? I would say ask yourself those questions. Stepping outside of the binary, you're queer. You're exploring your queerness. You live outside of the binary. You're living it. Like, just because you're not posting about it doesn't mean that you are not living in that. A tree makes noise in the forest, even if nobody hears it. Like, you are living this truth. You are living this reality. Now, having said that, we can absolutely hold the both and of the brain saying, oh my gosh, like pulling out all the mind or the inner transphobe or whatever, pulling out all of these different things. How we hold the both and of that, I think, is to be able to say, wow, I hear ya. Damn, that is hella transphobic. Wow, that's some pretty strong imposter syndrome stuff. Okay, mind, you must be really afraid to pull all this out, and I get it. But I'm not available to be spoken to that way. It's not the truth, even though it feels hard to hear. That's a part of the conditioning we picked up. And the truth is, we are queer. And that's a full sentence. And we get to take our time in what our relationship to that looks like, how we share it, how we don't. We're allowed to change our mind. There's nothing we have to do to attain anything. There's no mile marker to set. We get to come to where we want to be when we want to be there. And when we're ready, even if that's before we're fully comfortable, we will move into that. And brain, you can come with me. Because sometimes, like I've shared this a number of times before, you know, I grew up with a very dangerous caretaker who was not safe, who was harmful and threatened harm. And I will tell you, I'm always, even though they don't know where I live, they don't know my address, I'm across the country, there's always a concern, even though it's not a warranted one. They can barely walk now. So it's like, I'm always worried. And my brain tries to protect me, tries to keep me safe in ways that are unnecessary. And also, out of respect for the trauma that I have survived, I go at a gentle pace. And there is a lot of handholding. Like anytime I do a course, anytime I put out, like, and it's an undoing of some of that trauma. And there's an inevitable meeting of that trauma head on. As my trauma wants me to stay safe, silent, in the cave, hiding. It just wants me to hide. And the truth is, I am privileged enough to be safe. I am safe. Not everybody has that privilege. Not everybody, even when they're not safe, they still speak out. They still rise up, you know? So everybody is different, but holding the both and of those two, I do think I know for others it's really different, but it comes back to a place of warmth and witnessing around those contractive feelings and acknowledging that you're afraid. And of course you are, because it's a really intense thing. We're afraid. So if you can hold that, it does, I think, change the shape of it a little bit. It makes it possible to move forward if that's what you actually want to do. So it also gives you permission to not move forward if you don't want to, in whatever way that you might feel pushed to. You're already there. You don't need to prove it, you know? So that's what I would say. It is a slow process. It's a spiralic process. That's one of the ways I actually think that we can determine and get a hint if something is intuition or brain, that there's an emergence and a pushing from the brain that can feel pushy. Intuition can also be extremely persistent, but it has a different tonal quality than brain. And very often with brain comes like, you should, you ought to, you like, there's an internalized like threat Like, if you don't, XYZ may happen or will happen or could happen, or you'll miss something. Like, there's a hard to explain that in this kind of way, but with intuition, it's more like we flow. It's like a waterfall where we can get stuck up at the top of the waterfall, and then everything kind of goes to shit when we're blocking that flow. Like, things really start, there's more pressure that starts to build up. It's just a different thing where we just feel the blockage and the flow rather than feeling like we're being pushed into something. So while we may be saying the same thing, I just sort of wanted to give you permission. Because my sense is that, while I don't know, my sense is that of course you want to be sharing about, you know, and exploring and, you know, whatever, but there also may be just as much part of you that's like, I would actually like a little space to figure all this out, you know, for myself. So maybe it's both. Maybe it's giving yourself a little bit more time and space unapologetically, and then just spiraling into exploring it in a different way when you're ready. So I hope that makes sense. I hope this helps. Again, just loving on you, Anonymous, loving on everyone listening to this. And until we connect again, please take sweet care of yourselves. And if you are interested in the course that I'm doing and learning more about it, the link will be in the show notes. So love all of you. Take very sweet care of yourselves. This podcast was edited by Chase Voorhees. Podcast art by Rochelle Sartini-Gardner. And this episode was transcribed by one of our absolutely brilliant and beautiful transcriptionists, all of which you can learn more about or read about on our website, tarotforthewildsoul.com. If you wish to dive into more of my work, learn more about Soul Tarot, work with me in any kind of capacity, I'm always creating new things for us to do together. But you can find it all about our self-led courses and classes and new offerings on tarotforthewildsoul.com. And if you want to be the first to know about any new offerings, any new projects that I'm doing, if you want to benefit from discounts and early birds and all kinds of lovely newsletter-only offerings, you can sign up for the newsletter at the link in our show notes. And finally, if you have a question for me to answer at the podcast, or if you'd like to work with me live on the podcast, or if you'd like your question answered on the podcast, please click the link to Ask Lindsay and send me your cues. Thank you so much for being here.